This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
All right, Place to Be Nation universe, welcome back to the reaction show series as we are talking about WWE Fastlane, the final pay-per-view before WrestleMania, and the final of the split brand pay-per-views altogether. As yes, after WrestleMania, every show is dual-branded and 4 hours long. I'm your host, Chris Zellner, joined as always by my cohort, my co-conspirator, Devin Hales, the Oracle of WWE. Devin, how's it going, brother?
Doing good. I will defend the four-hour dual-branded shows real quick, and I think I mentioned this on our last podcast. I'm a WWE obsessive, so I actually just won back 6 Sundays of my life this year. So
that's a good point.
I there's not 18 pay-per-views, thank God. So I actually won. There's only one wrestling Sunday out of a month that I have to tell all my friends who actually want to have socialized that I can't hang out on Sunday because I want to watch wrestling. So that's
a good point. That is definitely a good point. You're all right. Well, we're not alone. That's right. It must be a big show because we are joined by another member of the Hales family, my cohort and co-conspirator on the Premier Podcast brand, Mr. Dylan Hales. Dylan, welcome back.
Glad to be back. Figured I'd jump in the saddle here as we get closer to the road to WrestleMania. The first WrestleMania and out of the last three that I will not be going to live. So my perspective on this is maybe a little bit different than previous years, but what an interesting show to talk about.
Yeah, because we had some interesting build up to this show on SmackDown, which has been some of the worst wrestling television in a while lately, and I think that tempered a lot of people's expectations for this show, which I know, Dylan, you talked about it before the show on Twitter that you thought this would probably be a really good show, and I always have that opinion, you know, because the thing is that this is not television. They don't have Brian Armstrong, James, whatever, is not having to rely on having to write, you know, do shitty promos and do shitty angles. It's everything is pretty much in ring on these shows. So it's hard to kind of mess it up with the talent they got, you know, unless they really have some actively bad matches.
This is going to be a weird one when we get to the end. I'm literally going to be talking my way through what I think about this show because when it was over, I honestly didn't know what I thought of it, and I still kind of feel that way. So this is definitely going to be one.
Yeah,
where I'm sort of talking myself to what my closing position is. I don't, I don't have a sort of immediate overall take on the show. I kind of have, more micro takes than macro takes. So interested to get into it.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat. So let's begin. We had the pre-show match. We had the Super Six on SmackDown in the SmackDown heyday in the mid 2000s. You know, Benoit, Angle, all those guys. Well, this is the Forgotten Six. Ty Dillinger, Tyler Breeze, and Fandango versus Mojo Rawley, Shelton Benjamin, and Chad Gable. These guys just don't appear on TV hardly anymore. And here they are here, thrown in this match. Ty Dillinger became an honorary member of the Fashion Police, which that was cute. And Mojo is still doing his new heel gimmick, and the fans let him have it, I'll say. With a big "you can't wrestle" chant during the match on him. Match was okay, you know. Crowd was into it. That was good. Ty getting the win over Mojo was definitely interesting optically in many ways. So, I don't know. So, Dylan, we're going to start off with you. Thoughts on the match and that finish. What's that say for Mojo Rawley?
Well, probably not very much. Ty Dillinger has been really a valuable in his own way utility player for a long time in the WWE, both at the NXT level and then, you know, now on the main roster for, I guess, you know, what, a little bit over a year now. I like Ty. I personally thought they should have put the US title on him actually, when they did the tournament, because I thought it would be a relatively easy way to elevate a guy who has a gimmick that people want to cheer for and is a solid hand in a format that would not have required him to necessarily get some upset wins or do. I mean, I guess you could theoretically say everything would be an upset with him, but you know what I mean. He wouldn't have had to go and beat a bigger name or whatever. And I thought there would, you know, that was an organic opportunity to elevate him. They didn't do it. It's clear that he's just a guy, and that's probably always what he's going to be. And if just a guy is beating you, then that's probably what they think of Mojo, you know. And at times, they've sort of teased that Mojo was going to be a bigger player. I don't think that he's ever really gotten to that point. And I think if he's not there now, it's probably not going to happen because, you know, if we look at the landscape going forward for the WWE, guys like Mojo Rawley are going to be the first people to get lost if Raw goes back to 2 hours if it moves to Fox. I mean, guys like that will be lucky to maintain employment, to be honest. I don't care who your buddies are. It's just going to be hard. And, you know, that's kind of the downside of the a two-hour Raw scenario that may come, you know, is that what the hell are you going to do with all these guys? So, you know, the match I thought was fine. I saw a lot of people on Twitter seem to really like it, or, you know, for an opener. To me, it's like maybe I've watched too much Main Event this year because Main Event has actually been really good and had a lot of good matches. And to me, it was like kind of like a mid-level match for Main Event, you know. So
it's not Goldust versus Kurt Hawkins.
That's true. The best of 55 or whatever they're engaged in on that show. But I did think it was a solid opener and it served its purpose, but it's kind of damning in that it calls attention to the complete irrelevancy of these acts. I joked on Twitter that imagine talking to somebody who hasn't watched TV in like 4 or 5 months and trying to explain the face heel dynamic in that match. I mean, it would be almost impossible to explain. Whatever. I mean, it was a filler spot on the card. I think really it just goes to show you that, you know, that's a two-hour show, and there's a lot of irrelevant guys on that two-hour show. And some of that may be due to writing, but it makes me wonder if these people pining for a two-hour Raw don't, you know, think about the consequences of what that means. I mean, you're going to have a lot of guys get lost in the shuffle. You're going to have a lot of guys that are going to be totally irrelevant. Or you're going to have a lot of guys that lose their job. That's pretty much the only way that it can be. That's just how it's going to have to work. So I don't want that to happen. I don't know if there's another solution, but this match, I think, is kind of instructive.
Yeah, definitely. That will be interesting to see what happens in the next year when the TV rights contract comes up. But Devin, I think my favorite part of this entire match was when they whipped out the headgear and Fandango became Rick Steiner circa 1991 for 15 seconds as Chad Gable threw him down. He got up, said, no more of that shit, got out of there. I love that. That's the best part of the match. What were your thoughts on the match?
It was a fun match. I think the most pleasing part was that the Columbus crowd, they looked like they may have sold out the building. Or close to it.
It was pretty packed house for pictures, yeah.
It was a packed building, and the crowd was into the match, which I think helped it a little bit. It was a fun match. I did like the wrestling spots or the amateur spots early in the match. It was fine. I kind of liked Mojo's reaction to the fans chanting at him. I think he has kind of the character down pat, but he's never really advanced in any way whatsoever in the ring, and I think that's really his biggest issue is that he doesn't know how to work. And it's not just, oh, laugh out loud, he doesn't do work right, blah, 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 blah. It's like he doesn't know how to work. So that just hurts him. It was a fun little opener, and I thought it started off the show well enough.
Oh yeah, I mean, it was about as good as you would get probably from a SmackDown pre-show.
Sure, definitely.
And Yeah, so I mean, because the roster is not really loaded. I think the entire roster was on the show, basically.
Yeah,
I can't
pretty
think
much.
Of really anybody on the SmackDown roster that wasn't here that mattered. I guess the Ascension, you know, some people like that. But yeah, I mean, this was basically everybody on the roster on the show, which that's a good thing, I guess. At least they got the work. All right, let's start with the main show here. And we have Shinsuke Nakamura against Rusev as your opening match, which was kind of interesting. I kind of wasn't expecting this one to be the opener, but they went out there. Rusev, I mean, Nakamura's over. Rusev is like next level over right now, and it's all over the place. It's not just in WWE. It's in other promotions, indies. I mean, he has got something. He always has had it, but he's got something with this gimmick, and they are trying their best not to help him get over. I mean, Nakamura is a good match. I mean, it was, and the match itself was really, really good. But it just, you got something here. Why do you want to? Why do you want to hold it down? Why don't you want to, you know, get it out there and make it grow and grow and grow and grow? I don't know. I mean, I saw somebody. I think it may have been our buddy Frey that talked about this was like 2012 Daniel Bryan or something like that. You know how. You know, they were trying to kill it and keep it down as long as they could. But I don't know. I mean, they're going to do something because Mania, that building is going to be loud with Rusev Day chants. So they better be prepared for it. But anyway, the match achieved what it needed to achieve. Rusev looked great. Nakamura, you know, he did what he needed to do. He came on, you know, fairly decently. And that bump he took off the super kick was insane. And that really got the crowd woke up, and he got the win. So, mission accomplished. So, Devin, what did you think about the match?
I thought it was really good. I definitely agree on your comments on Rusev. He's insanely over, just as over, or you know, probably more than Nakamura is, and Nakamura is in the main event at WrestleMania. Yeah. It's pretty amazing. I mean, Rusev is one of those guys in the roster who has. He's really one of the most talented guys from a full package standpoint. Great look, good promo. He can do comedy. He can do serious. He could probably do babyface really well. He's never really gone full babyface,
God,
but
I'm sure
think there's evidence that he could. I thought he was excellent in this match. I thought his facial expressions were tremendous. I thought he showed a lot of range for the selling and emotiveness. I thought he was awesome in this match. Nakamura was fine. I thought Rusev clearly was the better guy in the match. But I really enjoyed it. I know Dylan will bring it up, and I'm going to steal it from him, and he can carry on with it later. But And I did notice it too. I did think it was odd that they did a spot where they did a front face lock with Rusev working from underneath and doing a power spot to fight out of it. I don't know what the reason for that was. I actually thought it was a really good spot, but it was bizarre because Nakamura was clearly for the most part working as the face and Rusev as the heel. But it almost seemed like they were trying to do a. Because it was almost like two baby faces facing off because of the crowd reaction, they may have just decided to do that spot in there. Like you mentioned, the super kick spot was tremendous. I audibly popped and yelled and screamed when it happened. Great spot, great near fall. Really good finish. I like that it took a couple of Kinshasas to put away Rusev. So he got at least a very small, minor bit of protection in that regard. And I also have to give it to Aiden English for changing up his music and giving us a little rap there Columbus. But yeah, it was a really, really good match, and the crowd was hot for it. I thought Rusev was awesome, and also worth noting, I think he's like making bank. And merchandise sales, if I'm not mistaken, the Rusev Day.
Oh, I bought a shirt.
The Rusev Day merchandise has been going through the roof in terms of money making. So, They clearly want to kind of put them on TV just to push that, but they obviously don't know what to do or don't want to push him. I hate to bring it up, but I mean, he's one of those guys who, unfortunately, and I hate it because it, in today's age, it might come off as being misogynist or whatever, but Lana's a big problem backstage, and I think that's probably a prime reason why he's not getting the benefit of the doubt from the people backstage. I think he's got a problematic marital partner, and that's causing a lot of his issues. He's like a Drew McIntyre or a Mark Mero, you know. I think he's got that's really affecting him. Although Mark Mero was a little bit different, but you know, he's been affected by who his spouse is, unfortunately, and that happens sometimes. Yeah. I think that's really, really the key to it all.
Yeah, I mean, when those reports came out a couple of years ago about how, you know, Vince felt like Rusev, you know, and Lana,
shouldn't
be married to a guy like that, you know, and all this.
Well, during
stuff,
the whole summer angle where they did the proposal and then they announced their wedding and broke kayfabe or whatever, and then they all apparently got mad about that, and so you know, that's definitely hurt his presentation on the show the last couple of years.
But the thing about Rusev is, Dylan, is like Devin said, the guy is creative outside the ring. The stuff that they did the other day where him and Lana did their Bobby Roode Charlotte mocking routine, the videos he puts up, the stuff he's done, Rusev is a creative guy, he's a funny guy, he's got charisma, he can work, he's got a lot of tools, but they just can't seem to put it all together and make him into a main player.
Yeah, well, so I mean, here's the thing. Yeah. He also has one of the better Twitters of anybody on the roster.
Yeah, he does.
Yes.
But I actually think that kind of speaks to something like, you know, Devin made the point about the engagement situation before where they publicized it and everybody got mad and all that other stuff. Like, look, I don't think there's any question that the Lana thing has hurt him. And that some of her heat is transferred onto him. But I also think he's gotten to the point now where he's just sort of embraced the idea that he is at least a comedic character. You know?
Yes.
That's a good point. Because he's certainly not running away from it. I mean, he runs his Twitter, not Lana. So, like, you know, he's the one that is for better or worse, he's chosen to embrace that. And the WWE, it's weird. At times, guys like that are pushed and presented and given an opportunity to be main eventers, and at other times, there's just sort of a natural cap on them, and they don't go higher than they are. And, you know, in this era, with the Young Bucks and all that, and being the elite and everything, there's really no reason that somebody can't be a main event guy if they're doing that kind of stuff. Because that's basically what Rusev's doing, a version of that kind of stuff, you know, through the filter of the WWE and his own personal Twitter account. And the Rusev Day phenomenon, it's like, I saw, you know, in the middle of the match, I had somebody on Twitter, like, retweet where they said, you know, Rusev's not really over, it's just Rusev Day, the chant. People just like the chant. It's like, A, that's kind of I think it's debatable whether or not those are actually separate things. Because at some point, if people are still into your matches and chanting that, I don't think it really matters. But B, I think that's demonstrably untrue. You know, like when Rusev went to put Nakamura on the accolade tonight, the crowd popped.
Mm-hmm.
If it was just the chant, they wouldn't have given a shit. They wouldn't have done anything.
Bobby Roode, for example.
That's correct. Bobby Roode or Nakamura in a lot of matches.
Yeah.
Because tonight wasn't the case. Nakamura was super over tonight. But we've all seen Nakamura matches in the last year where he gets this monstrous reaction when he comes out, and he gets a reaction when he does sort of like the sticky stuff. And then the other 60 to 70% of the match, you know, the crowd's, you know, has zero engagement or virtually zero engagement. I mean, that's not a controversial position if you're watching SmackDown week to week. And I don't even think that's necessarily entirely Nakamura's fault. tonight, you know, I thought they had a good match. I thought they did a pretty good job of protecting Rusev. I thought they went out of their way desperately. The reason I thought the front face lock spot was so weird is I thought they desperately went out of their way to try and heel Rusev in front of that crowd. They did a new, they had Aiden English come out and bury the city. Then they had Rusev do Larry Zbyszko stalling spots to get heat.
Yeah.
And it still didn't work.
Yeah.
He was still more over than the guy who's in the Mania main event. Now, here's a question. For all the people who complain about fan reaction you know, Roman's fan reaction or other people's fan reaction, should we boot Nakamura out of the main event, put Rusev in it now? Because despite being presented as a heel and despite getting real no push on TV, relatively speaking, the worst you could say tonight was that he was as over. And I honestly think, if you're being honest, he was really more over than Nakamura tonight. And Nakamura's really over, too. The crowd was really into this match, much more than I would have guessed. It was a testament to both guys. I felt like Rusev really... I don't want to say carried the match in the sense that I think Nakamura's natural charisma always adds to his matches and stuff like this, and always sort of adds to the drama of the near falls. But the first 60% of that match is pretty much a Rusev carry job. I mean, Nakamura does virtually nothing. And it's all sort of dictated by the pacing and build and body language of Rusev. And then when it starts to heat up, it becomes a little bit more even and whatnot. But I thought it was real good. I didn't think it was great, but I thought it was a real good match. You wish that Rusev would get more chances. You know, I mean, if they're going to have the Andre, maybe he could win the Andre. You do something with him after. I don't know. He's a guy where, you know, there's a lot of people in the WWE who are not pushed the way that you or I might like, or you know what I mean? But he's a guy where it almost doesn't make sense how they push him, right? Like, it's one thing to say, I wish Cesaro was a main eventer, which I actually kind of don't anymore. But, like, there was certainly a period where I think everybody on this call would have said that. But it's another thing with Rusev in the sense that Rusev can talk. Rusev has personality. Rusev has a social media presence. Rusev can work multiple different styles. Rusev can be a babyface. Rusev can be a heel. He's a more complete package than Cesaro is. And it just is weird that this guy is not utilized at a stronger level.
It is. It really is. And maybe one day somebody will come to that realization. But as of now, him and Aiden English will still do their shtick and probably be in the Andre. So we'll see how that goes. All right, next match. U.S. Heavyweight title. Bobby Roode defending against Randy Orton. And one of those matches that if you ever go on Twitter or any type of social media and you see that meme of Spider-Man pointing to Spider-Man, this is that match. This is definitely that match. As a lot of similarities between these two guys. Man, was this tedious for quite a long time into it. But the crowd, you know, they were fairly into it, which, you know, that's a good thing. They were a good crowd, so that helped out. But your standard Orton match, and picked up late. And we got, you know, the big RKO at the end. Orton goes over, wins the title. Jinder comes out, attacks him after the match. Roode saved Orton, and Roode hit Orton. So looks like we might be heading to another multi-man match at Mania. Oh boy, it's going to be multi-mania for sure. But Dylan, your thoughts on the match and three-way dance, huh?
Looks like we're setting up for another WrestleMania 2000, where I think every single match on the show was a multi-person match. Which I'm not a huge fan of, but this was a match. I mean, that's kind of my review of it. Like, these guys exist. They occupy space. Every WrestleMania season, the WWE tries really hard to convince you that Randy Orton's relevant. This year, their way of doing it is by putting a title on him. And I mean, I will say that I do think there is some novelty in them going out of their way to point out that he never had the U.S. title. I did like that. I thought that was a good touch. There was a reason why he would want it. That makes sense. I didn't think the match was bad. It was way too long.
Wait.
But I didn't hate it. I didn't think it was abysmal. It's just these are two guys I just don't care about. You know, Orton is probably the most overexposed wrestler of all time, ever, in any promotion. And Bobby Roode, I don't hate. I think he's a, you know, a solid enough worker, but there's just there's nothing exciting about him. He's just a guy. And, you know, at some point, without that sort of magnetic energy that you ideally want out of a top guy, it's hard to get enthusiastic. And, you know, I wasn't looking forward to this match coming in, and I wasn't looking forward to it coming out. And, you know, I don't really want to see a rematch with Jinder added. So, I mean, you know, if it was a just insane society, they'd bury that match on the pre-show and not the cruiserweights or Bayley versus Sasha or whatever. Those matches need to make the main show. Put this damn thing on the pre-show because nobody wants to see it.
Yeah, this wasn't a ring endorsement for a three-way dance, that's for sure. Because, you know, Jinder's had his moments, but you throw Jinder in with these two. Ooh.
Ooh, well, Jinder's strength is working heat, right? And whether you like him or not, if you're the kind of person who likes a Jinder Mahal match, you probably like him in the sense of an old school traditional heel who sort of beats his baby face down and wears him down in a longer heat segment, and then you can do the comeback and the finish. How the hell is that going to work in this match? Like, it's not a good mix.
No, it's definitely not. Devin, I mean, Bobby Roode, as was mentioned with Nakamura, you know, he's basically become a theme pop match. Everybody silent. Theme at the end. Everybody pops again. Yeah, I think the theme has actually become kind of a detriment to him at this point. What do you think?
Yeah, the theme is why he's over at, and you know, for any reason at all. That's the only reason he really does get any reaction. Or when the fans get to yell glorious. He's also miscast as a babyface, and so is his girlfriend, I guess, yes. Now too, for that matter, and we'll get to that later. I
pulling the curtain back, huh?
we'll get to her, and I have a feeling Dylan will too from his tweets earlier, but yeah, this match was going okay, you know, whatever, you know, I thought, you know, this is probably going to be either shockingly good or, like, you know, boring, and then, you know, it was going fine, you know, the back and forth, and then Bobby Roode put in a headlock, and I was bored, and it, you know, it went on way too long, and they tried to have this work rate match or something, and, you know, I mean, imagine a Randy Orton versus Bobby Roode work rate match, and that's what you got, you know, it was just boring. Orton won with the RKO. His RKOs out of nowhere always look good, always get a good pop. You know, I agree with Dylan. I like the idea and the story of Orton getting the one title he hasn't had, the U.S. title, and achieving that goal. So I do like that part about the story. The post-match was fine, although I do think it's hilarious that the most charismatic guy going into a major... title match at WrestleMania is Jinder Mahal, and I'm a Jinder Mahal fan, but when Jinder Mahal is your most interesting, charismatic guy in a match, it's there's not a lot of hope for it, I don't think. And that triple threat sounds like a total snooze on paper, and knowing how triple threat matches work in WWE, you know, everybody always tries to do crazy spots and shit, and I can't imagine those three guys trying to, you know, out bump each other and do crazy shit. That just sounds like a horrible disaster in more ways than one. That's the least interesting match on the Mania card so far, I think.
Yeah. All right. We had a little deal with Kevin and Sammy backstage, shutting the stage up for what happened in the main event, where Sammy said he'll lay down for him. Well, we'll see. All right. Next, we have Naomi and Becky Lynch versus Natalya and Carmella. And this one was interesting in many ways. God, the fans, you know, which was pretty hot throughout the entire show, kind of cooled off for this match, which, I mean, I guess you kind of understandable considering who was involved. The girls worked hard here. They really did. There was a little awkwardness, which, you know, kind of be expected, but they worked hard. Carmella going over Becky Lynch. Interesting finish, and man, Becky Lynch is another one. kind of like Rusev in a way these days and how she's being portrayed. But Devin, what you think about the match? And I guess this is setting the stage for Carmella to eventually try to cash in.
Yeah, the match was fine. It was pretty decent at times. I thought they all worked hard. They clearly went out there to try to have a good match and to make something out of it. And I commend the effort there. You know, the problem is really in the case of the heel team, they're not over. You know, Carmella looked like she was on the rise last summer when she won the briefcase, and Ellsworth as her second was really working. She was getting tremendous heat. I think she's a good character, and I actually think she's improved a little bit in the ring. I thought she was pretty good tonight in the ring. You know, I think when you get to the big high spots and the counters and stuff, she's obviously got some work to do there. But I liked her aggressiveness. I liked the spot where she beat the crap out of Naomi on the ring apron. But losing Ellsworth really hurt her heat. And she's somebody who needs a second like that to really add to the character. And of course, Natty doesn't get any heat cause she stinks. And Naomi is someone who's hit or miss in terms of her in ring ability. She's incredibly athletic, but sometimes she's too ambitious or tries too much. And that happened a little bit here. And then of course you also have the case where Natty and Carmella aren't the best bases at all. So, you know, they weren't helping her out. Poor Becky, she was getting actually the biggest reactions in this match. The fans were begging for her to come into the ring, and she got a great pop off the hot tag. And she's the most misused, underrated, as Dylan pointed out, and I'll let him carry through with this here in a few minutes. She's the most underrated wrestler, maybe on the entire roster, men and women. She's consistently over. She's consistently solid in the ring. She's, you know, it doesn't make any. It's bizarre. The way she's been booked over the last year is just mind-boggling. She continues to work hard and be over, but she never really is put in a position to look strong at all. And tonight was another clear example with getting pinned clean by Carmella. And you know, I get that Carmella's probably going to do a cash-in angle here around Mania season, and that's probably the prime reason for that. But it's interesting. I don't know. I don't – Becky's – you know, I feel bad for her. I mean, she's clearly the most lost in the shuffle of the women who I would consider to have some semblance of star power or big time relevancy within the women's division. She's the one who's clearly like the most misused and underutilized.
You know, Dylan, she may be the biggest example of somebody needs to move shows. She desperately needs to get off SmackDown. She needs to get on Raw and get some type of fresh start because, I mean, this is – it's just kind of really not fair at this point to her because she – like you know, you've said and Devin said, she's always over. The fans are always into her, and it just – it's not translating into a push.
Yeah, she's very likable. I likened her tonight to Ducky from Pretty in Pink. She's like the woman version of Ducky from Pretty in Pink. You know, she can be kind of annoying, but she's ultimately eminently rootable. And she has a sort of an innate likability quality to her that I don't even think she could turn off if she wanted to. And it's just ridiculous, you know. Like, I don't understand it. Honestly, I agree with you in principle that a move to Raw would help her, but I'm not sure it would actually make a difference in practice because I have a feeling this is a company wide problem for her and not something that's intrinsic to SmackDown. Sadly, the match itself, I actually probably liked it more than a lot of people. Not that I thought it was anything special. I just was kind of fine with it. I thought it sort of fell apart after the Naomi hot tag to Becky. Not so much because everything, like, because Becky was bad, but because it was just, it felt like at that point there was some, like, it was not, there was not a coherent vision of where they were going next. And, you know, there were some nice individual moments in the match. I would have been perfectly fine had they just decided to do a random Becky versus Naomi singles match, to be honest. But it was fine for what it was on the show. I mean, they clearly needed another filler match on the show, and I think this was fine in that from that perspective. But the bigger issue is, I agree, the heels weren't over, and the bigger issue is, Carmella cannot, she can't be the women's champion right now in the current climate. No, like, she can't. She's just not good enough. Like, it would be, I agree with Devin that there was a period where it looked like the character was turning the corner. That period is long in the rearview now. I do also agree with Devin that she's improved slightly as a worker, but she's still, I mean, if you look at the women on the roster, just on SmackDown, I'm not entirely convinced she's not the worst one. Like, some people would say Natty, but I'm not so sure about that. And, you know, I don't see how they can put the title on her at this point. And if they do the often speculated about thing at Mania where they have Asuka defeat Charlotte and then have a cash-in and Carmella win. I mean, listen. I understand that, like, oh, it would get heat and blah, blah, blah. It's like, yeah, that would get, like, die in a fire, please don't live, I don't want to watch this promotion heat. Not like, wow, how great is this heat? Like, it would be the kind of thing that, at least for me, and I suspect for a lot of people, it would be the kind of thing that makes you not want to watch the show. Not because I, like, if this was, like, if it was Ruby Riott with a briefcase, I wouldn't care. Or Sarah Logan, I wouldn't care. I mean, like, there's a lot of people that it could be with the briefcase and I wouldn't care, but not Carmella. She's just not a good enough performer. I'm not just talking about in-ring. I'm talking about as a whole. She's just not a good enough performer to be doing that. So I really hope they don't go that direction.
There is, these are rumors, but there is speculation that she actually cashes in before the match starts or something, and then it's like a triple threat, and then she actually takes the fall from Asuka to protect Charlotte or something, which is actually something that they would do too.
That is something that they would do because Charlotte is more protected than Brock Lesnar, which we'll get to later. But that, like, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Carmella as a WWE Women's Champion would have fit, you know, 10 years ago. Not now. Definitely not now. Not in this era. But putting somebody like Carmella over somebody like Asuka, I mean, that'd be a Kevin Dunn wet dream. So, speaking of, hey, that something I forgot to mention in the Rude Ort match, Byron Saxton calling out Kevin to do a replay on the air.
I laughed at that.
Tremendous. And then you had in this match, you had Corey Graves shining out Teddy Hart. What a show this was. When he was running down all the list of Natty's friends, which was all family members, Harry and Teddy, you know, like, fucking Teddy Hart's name was just dropped on the WWE pay-per-view. Amazing.
I wonder if Corey's ever run into Teddy in the lobby of a hotel at 4:30 when his fanny pack was full. Anyway, moving on.
Oh, boy. There's something I could say, but I'm not going to say it right now. I'm not going to say it. All right, we'll move on to probably the match that I was looking forward to the most of the show because of how great this rivalry has been. Tag titles, New Day and Usos. Usos defending. These two teams is kind of, you know, a surefire lock that whenever they're in the ring against each other, it's going to be a good match. And this one was heading that way. But we had interesting in the beginning because we got Kofi and Xavier as the team of New Day here, not Big E. So that was an interesting beginning here. And they went close to 10 minutes doing what they do. Crowd was into it. You know, looked like it was about to really get going. And then out comes the Bludgeon Brothers. And they just beat the shit out of everybody. I mean, they just destroyed them. And I know a lot of people at first were kind of complaining. But listen, this match, I mean, they basically blew the feud off anyway. This match kind of felt like it didn't need to happen in a way. But it was just there. But if you've been watching SmackDown television and paid attention, the Bludgeon Brothers thing has been building up. I mean, they have been building this up that they were going to do something to these teams. And that's what happened. They come out here and they beat the shit out of them. And they did it as good as you could do it, basically. As you got all these guys who are great bumpers just killing, getting killed out here to get these guys over. And I definitely think it worked. Harper and Roman looked immensely stronger here than they've had, even in their squash matches. It achieved what they needed to achieve. The fans were booing because they ruined a really good match that they were into. And I really dug it. I dug the whole thing. So, Dylan, I mean, I know you kind of were the same way. You were pretty much predicted this was going to happen, and then it happened, and I think you were pleased with the execution.
Yeah, I mean, I would have been fine if the match, like, listen, in an ideal scenario, they go 5 or 6 minutes longer because the match was really good up until that point. So we get more of a sort of like, you know, more of a highlight match from two all-time great teams. Sure. But in terms of what logically needed to be done, and like, look, it makes no sense right now for the Usos and the New Day to even wrestle. Now, I understand that they're two of the best teams of all time. They are obsessed with being the best. The promo segment building, it was amazing, excellent, as good as we've seen on WWE TV all year so far. So they made the most of it, but this was already blown off. You know, so going back to this, really the only reason to go back to this was to do the Bludgeon Brothers thing. That was the only reason to go back to this feud. You know, they just blew it off back in, what, September, you know, or October, whatever it was. So really the only reason to go back to this so quick after, and they really made a big deal out of treating that as a final ending, if you remember, back on when they blew it off. So to me, the only reason to go back to this was to get to something with the Bludgeon Brothers. So I figured we'd get a Bludgeon Brothers run in. I was not surprised by it at all. You could argue that the campiness of doing the music on the run-in was a little ridiculous, but I thought the execution of it was actually quite good. I thought it was an awesome beatdown. I mean, they like basically everything Harper and Rowan did looked awesome. They like you could not have asked for a better shit kicking and steamrolling than what they delivered. You know, I mean. The cross body from Rowan on the floor, the insane power bomb on Xavier Woods on the stairs, and them now claiming he has a spinal injury or whatever. I thought it was extremely well executed. The match itself, they did the sort of mirror spot thing where the idea was that the two teams know each other so well that they were basically just cosplaying each other effectively and stealing each other's offense. And there's a part of me that doesn't like that in the sense where it's almost a little bit too cute. But they were able to do it in such a way where it came off like almost like, I swear this is going to sound like I'm being racial and I don't mean it to. It came off almost like a rap battle type thing where it's like, okay, I'm going to consciously top you at what you do. And then you're going to have to come back and do the same thing to me rather than just, you know, the old WWE trope of where in certain matches, guys will hit the other guy's finish, which I don't always love. So I thought the way they played it worked really well. And I think it worked really well, especially for these characters. I will say, while I'm super excited for the Bludgeon Brothers to be wrestling either one of those teams or both, you know, I also you have to. I'm not enamored with the idea of a triple threat. I'd be fine if they do it. I think it will still be a really good match, but I almost wish they would take one of those teams and move them over to Raw to give the Bar a main event match or a WrestleMania tag team match, and take, you know, and then have the Usos wrestle the Bludgeon Brothers straight up. I know that's almost for certain not going to happen, but that would almost be my preference. But overall, I really enjoyed this. I mean, if you were hoping for a great match for the Usos and New Day, I don't think they've gotten to that point yet, so I could see that being a little disappointing. But the beatdown I thought was excellent. And, you know, for people complaining that this was on pay-per-view, look, yes, that's the case. But sometimes, even on pay-per-view, this is still the best decision. And realistically, with this being the last pay-per-view before WrestleMania and the last Split Brand pay-per-view for the foreseeable future, they treated this basically like a very, very high-stakes SmackDown. And I don't think that was a bad decision given the context. I don't. I actually think it was probably as smart a decision as they could make given the circumstance. So I had no problem with it. I liked it. You know, you could question the optics of the 2018 version of WWE Gang Wars with your, you know, to the 1997 version. Like, you know, in 97 we had Los Boricuas and the Nation of Domination and DOA. And that really does kind of show the evolution of right-wing politics in America, too, because the DOA were very much your Nazi skinhead biker gang guys, whereas the Bludgeon Brothers are more of your Varg listening to neo-reactionary Curtis Yarvin defender, like the guys that are marching with Richard Spencer defending his speaking rights at Michigan State or something. Like that's so you could see the evolution of the extreme Hitler right through the prism of the presentation of the Bludgeon Brothers. So that was kind of a fascinating byproduct to watch. But all three of those teams are excellent. So anything I do with them should be great.
Yeah. Now, Devin, was it me or did the hammers look a little smaller tonight than they have looked? They look like they're smaller hammers.
They might have been smaller because they actually used them.
They were gimmicked too. Yeah.
But
yeah, we can't have any brain matter coming out of somebody's head because they got smashed with that damn gigantic hammer. But Dylan's running the money, I thought. But again, here we go, Devin. Another three-way, Romania way it looks.
This is the one I've actually been looking forward to. I've actually not really looked forward to the other three ways, although Miz, Balor, Rollins doesn't bother me, but I think that's going to be turned into a five-way. Fuck me. This one is actually one I'm looking forward to. The match itself was really good. I liked that they did the, you know, I think it fit within the narrative of the story of the each other using each other's moves, and I liked they changed it up and they worked it completely differently from the other matches, and I think they kind of had to. And they had to do that stuff to make this different and stand out a little bit more because the rivalry did pretty much end in October. I thought it was an unusual, I kind of criticized the idea of having Big E cut that big promo and then not even work the match. I thought that was odd.
Exactly.
I wouldn't have done that. If he's going to cut that promo, I would have had him work the match. But although I think the commentary did a nice job trying to cover up and say that they, you know, the New Day chose Xavier and Kofi to try and contend with the speed of the Usos, you know, and the agility, which I thought was a nice piece of business from the commentary team to try to explain that decision. You know, I was a little bummed at first, and I seemed probably a little overly negative after the fact, because, you know, I did want to see a great match, but I thought it was a pretty predictable finish, and I thought it was probably the right one, and this has definitely been built to the last couple of months because the Bludgeon Brothers have come out and interrupted the New Day and the Usos. I think they interrupted the Usos a couple of times, and then they interrupted them after the big promo segment a couple of weeks ago. So this has definitely been built to, and I thought the beatdown was completely awesome. Totally brutal beatdown. Just great stuff. The Xavier Woods thing is kind of interesting. I wonder if they'll have Biggie and Kofi work as the team. Xavier, like, do an injury angle with him and be their second there on the floor.
One quick thing I just struck me, Devin. I want to shoehorn in this ridiculous thought. You expanding on the Gang Wars theme some more. This just occurred to me while you were talking. You could really make it very interesting. Dynamic if you brought in AOP as like your militarized police force and then had Sanity come in as Antifa and just completely beat the shit out of the Bludgeon Brothers. So there's really a lot of dynamics that they can run with there. Anyway,
God damn, a Bludgeon Brothers is AOP.
Who would be the Bernie Bros?
Breezango. Oh, that would be incredible.
Bernie Bros would probably definitely be Future Shock, Colin O'Reilly. Oh, man. Poor Bobby Fish. But, yeah.
Sorry, Devin, for stepping on your point.
I thought the booking of this was really good, even if I did want to see a full great match. But I agree that they didn't really have to have another one, or they probably shouldn't have had to have another one, because the feud, you know, it does make the most sense to have this Bludgeon Brothers interruption. And it was certainly being built to on TV the last couple of months. And I had predicted this three-way to happen. Of course, it hasn't been officially announced yet, but I'm sure that's the case for the last month or so. So this is definitely the direction and probably the right direction that they're going in. And I do think it'll be a great, great match.
Probably the last time that we have an Usos New Day interaction on a big show, because I got to think one of them Shake is going up. To Raw. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Shake yeah. Up. One of them's, I imagine might be the Usos.
Should be the Usos. I think a Usos bar trade would be perfect. You send a bar with SmackDown, let the bar feud with New Day.
There you go.
So we'll see how that plays out. All right. AJ Styles interview and had a conversation with Nakamura, you know, keeping that thing going. All right. Our next match, and this was an interesting match. Women's title, Charlotte defending against Ruby Riott, and this was another interesting match for crowd heat. The crowd and the women matches were kind of not the same as the other matches. And part of the reason is, you know, Charlotte's just not an effective babyface. She really isn't. She's totally miscast, just like her boyfriend, Bobby Roode, Devin. But the story of this match, though, was Ruby Riott. Ruby Riott is tremendous. She's a tremendous worker. She's good in everything she's been in. She was good in NXT. She's good here. Of course, she was tremendous on the indie scene, you know, all the various places she worked there. And I'm glad that she got definitely a spotlight singles match on a pay-per-view show. And she looked great and did her best to make Charlotte look good. Charlotte was clunky, as usual. She's kind of mechanical in ways, just not good as a babyface. She's way better as a heel. So hopefully, you know, with the situation that we're about to talk about with Asuka, that, you know, she'll go back to her heelish ways, as Charlotte did beat Ruby. And after the match, Asuka came out, pointed to the sign, which the crowd loved, and Charlotte, you know, basically smiled and nodded and accepted the challenge. So Devin, me and you call this. We called this, we didn't know exactly how it was going to get there, but we called it that Asuka was going to face Charlotte, you know, for the title. And I like the Lexus tweet after that, after saying that Oscar made a great choice. So now we're clearing the deck now for Alexa and Nia to have their WrestleMania match, more likely than not. And yeah, I mean, the match itself was kind of Liv and Sarah, you know, at ringside, I thought they did a good job in what they did. Of course, Naomi and Becky came out, and then we had all that, you know, stuff where it all got kicked out. But wow, Charlotte, ooh, they got to turn her heel. They got to.
Yeah, she's terribly miscast as a babyface. She was definitely not a good one in 2015 when she came on to the main roster. I like those Nikki Bella matches, but they were largely because of Nikki Bella, and that's not a troll. You know, she's still a solid performer as a babyface, but she just totally you know, the fans don't care about Charlotte as a babyface. They don't get behind her. She's not effective in that role. And that showed here. I think they act, you know, the match was pretty good. And Ruby was excellent in this match. And I think the work got the fans into the match. And you know, you have to credit Charlotte some because she did work hard and looked, you know, solid at times. But Ruby was the one who really was really putting in the work here in this one. And she pulled out Senton and took some nice bumps and whatnot. I thought they did a good job of putting in some you know, creative little touches with the distraction spots with the Riot Squad and whatnot and so on and so forth. The biggest what the fuck and the biggest argument for why Charlotte Flair is quote-unquote, as Roman Reigns haters say, the most pushed down our throat wrestler there is when she kicked out of Ruby Riott's finisher 2 minutes into the match.
Oh!
That was bizarre. I mean, that was total stupidity. That was really the one part of the match I didn't like at all. I thought that was... I audibly looked over to my brother Dustin, I was like, why the fuck did they just blow through her finish in 2 minutes? That was terrible. Otherwise, I thought the match was pretty good. And I thought Ruby was very, very good in it. I've been calling the Asuka thing since about early in the year. Well, since probably about right after the Rumble, after she won, and kind of just throwing it out there and talking about it a little bit on Twitter. And Chris and I started to talk about it last month at the Chamber, and we both agreed that this would happen somehow, some way, and it did. And if we can recall, you know, on the first Raw of the year, Asuka made Alexa submit clean, so that match already happened.
Yeah.
That match is over with. You know, that's for later on down the line. You know, maybe again. There was no reason to do that one. And I really think that match was kind of a clear sign that wasn't the direction. After they blew through that match on TV, I thought that was a sign of like, okay, that's not going to be the case. You know, they're going to find a way to get Asuka and Charlotte to face off, and they did, and so we have that match. And you know, I really wish Charlotte was a heel going into this. I still think the match could and should be very good to great. But this is going to be interesting. And it'll also be interesting to see if they throw the Carmella wrench into things and whether or not that'll be interesting to see how all this plays out. But it looks like Asuka's on SmackDown and it's Asuka Charlotte. So that's a big match and it looks like it'll get the nice hype train. So it's probably going to be treated like a main event match, you know? So,
yeah, you know, it's been almost 3 years ago now, that Dylan, myself and, our buddy Bix, we did a Exile on Bad Street covering the death of Jim Crockett Promotions in 1988. And towards the end of the show, we discussed, a bit that was in the newsletters at the time about how, Ric Flair, after the Turner buyout, he wanted to turn the NWA into like an American version of All Japan Pro Wrestling. And the match he wanted Starrcade originally was him versus Tenryu. Well, guess what we got 30 years later? We got a Flair versus a Japanese wrestler on the promotion's biggest show of the year. Amazing how that turned out. But, Dylan, I mean, Charlotte, I mean, the comparisons to Brock Lesnar, I'm gonna let you handle all that because they are definitely viable. And your thoughts on the match and Charlotte's Queen of the Mountain.
Yeah, you know, I mean, here's the thing. I think people probably assume that I'm lower on Charlotte than I am, but I do pick on her some because I think that she is... There's an interesting contrast between the way she's talked about and the way Sasha's talked about. I think Sasha Banks is often picked apart in a way that Charlotte Flair simply isn't by many of the same people. And there is something that irks me. You know, it's like, it's kind of like when, you know, you get like middle class white people who complain about affirmative action, but then they don't bother to look at like the people that get into the school because their dads were there and they were legacied in and all the advantages those people have. It's like there's something about it that just strikes me as so disingenuous that I don't even know where to start with it. And I have a very similar feeling about the way that the narrative around Charlotte has been created when Sasha Banks is right there, right, at the exact same time. And it doesn't mean she's not a good performer. She is terribly miscast as a babyface, right? It's not so much. The irony is, I think that there's always going to be a segment of the crowd that does want to cheer her, primarily because of her last name, but also because she does have an authentic, natural charisma. I think that's undeniable. But in her mannerisms and how she carries herself, she's just way better off as a heel. And this was one of those matches that I think they put her with Ruby for a reason. Ruby is, as far as a bell-to-bell performer goes, as good as any woman that they currently have under contract. As good or better than any woman that they currently have under contract. And, yeah, it's kind of a throwaway defense. Yeah, it was obvious who was going to win. But if you're trying to heat Charlotte up for Mania, and she really hasn't done anything because the SmackDown women's division has been booked so poorly. And that's not her fault.
Nope.
She needed to have a match that was good and got people excited for the idea of a good match. Because part of the narrative around Charlotte Flair is that she's the, quote, best women's wrestler in WWE history. They push it a lot. It gets pushed a lot by a certain segment of hardcore fans online. I don't think it is true, but it's definitely part of the narrative. And I think that's why this match was done. And I don't know what I thought about the match. At parts, I thought it was really good. At other parts, it struggled from what a lot of Charlotte matches struggle from, which is these sort of awkward exchange. We saw this a lot in the Sasha series. And, you know, that was a heavily debated, you know, point online. Is it Sasha's fault because she's so reckless and she doesn't have control of her body, which is what I saw a lot of people say, both wrestlers and fans? Or is it that Charlotte Flair has the basing ability of, you know, like, you know, Punishment Martinez or versus Sobrano or whatever that guy is? I don't know what the answer is. Like, I think in the case of the Sasha matches, it was probably a little bit from column A, a little bit from column B. We know Charlotte's reckless. We also know, I think it's fair if we're not just being fanboys, that Charlotte isn't a very good base, especially for somebody of her size. She's kind of not. And I think we saw little hints of that here at times in this match. And she's a really good wrestler, right? And she's going to have a really good match with Asuka. And I'm fine with that being the match at Mania. I think it's, you know, in many ways it might be the most logical choice because of reasons that Devin's already talked about. But it just, the overall narrative of Charlotte, I mean, kicking out of Ruby's finish 2 minutes in, why?
It wasn't necessary.
Like, What was the point of that?
At least get your foot under the rope or on it.
Yeah, I mean, what was the point of that other as an ego stroke? I mean, who even called that? Like, that's the kind of thing where, you know, there's no
Uncle Arn.
Maybe because it's one of those spots where the only reason I can even envision somebody calling it is to subtly bury the other person. Like, I don't understand any other reason why you would do it. It wasn't like the match was a sprint. It wasn't like they let Ruby escape from her finish or something right after, you know, which would be the only logical reason you might do it. It just sort of continues the idea to me that Charlotte Flair gets treated in a way that is different than the way other WWE women's talent gets treated. And I think, you know, if you want to argue that she's earned it to the extent that she's proven she can handle the road schedule, she has had a lot of really good matches, she clearly is one of the best WWE women they've ever had. Okay, I mean, maybe that's true, but if you look at the way she's been treated and booked and protected compared to all of the other women that came up with her in that Horsemen group, I mean, yes, the SmackDown women's roster has not been booked well, right? But she's been immensely protected the entire time.
Women and Bayley and Sasha and Becky have, that's true. And,
you know, the only person who's really been protected as much or more than her is Asuka.
That leads to an interesting dilemma for Mania is, I mean, Asuka has to go over.
If they have Charlotte Flair go over in that match, if that happens, I don't even, like, I cannot envision any scenario where that is a finish that would be acceptable in the universe that they've created right now, other than, you know, the idea that this is just a Charlotte Flair vanity project and that the entire women's division exists solely to promote her. I mean, I'm not suggesting that now, but I mean, if they do that, like, what possible good reason would there be to put Charlotte Flair over Asuka at WrestleMania? What possible good reason? I cannot imagine they would do that. But I have to admit, there's a part of me that thinks it's at least a small possibility just because it's Charlotte. If it's anybody else, I wouldn't think so. Anybody else.
There are people in that company that would definitely prefer that. And the thing is that the whole thing with Asuka is that you mentioned about, you know, being a Charlotte Vanity project. That same thing people have been saying about Asuka, the way Triple H has, you know, protected her and he's portrayed her. So I mean, this is the most interesting match on the show.
Oh, it's definitely the match that I think will be the most interesting to see. But I mean, look, Charlotte.
I'm still convinced Carmella's going to be there in the three-way, and then she'll tap to Asuka.
I mean, you could be wrong. You could be right. I mean, honestly, I could easily see a situation where Carmella plays Mance Warner to Charlotte Flair's Teddy Hart because Charlotte doesn't want a job. I could absolutely see that as a possibility.
Or I mean, they're doing Seth Rollins, you know, and Brock and Roman and Mania, doing a callback to that.
Yeah.
You know, where Seth cashed in.
I think it's a weird situation. And I almost feel bad with as harsh as I've been on Charlotte, because I actually do think she's a good wrestler. And I really don't think she's a political maneuver so much as she's in the position where she is, and there are powerful people in the company that have a lot of faith in her. I don't like her for other reasons, and, you know, basically family ties. And they have gone out of their way to create this master narrative that she's the best in the company as a woman. And, you know, like, they are very wedded to it. And I don't think that they're going to let go of that easily. You know, like, it's going to be really interesting to see how that match plays out. At this point, I mean, look, if you can't have a good match with Asuka, forget it. And Charlotte, You know, she's looked good this year. I mean, I don't know what this match with Ruby I thought was kind of weird. Like, I would say it was definitely more good than bad, but I was not overly impressed with it. It didn't blow me away. Whereas I thought it had the potential to, it just didn't. And I think a lot of that is just that Charlotte's not a good babyface. But, you know, where they're going to go from here, like it's she's had good stuff on TV. The Sarah Logan match was good, you know, so she's done some good stuff this year, but it's going to be interesting to see how she works with Asuka because, I don't know. Like, can you imagine if she drops Asuka the way, like, she, like, dropped Sasha on her head a few times?
Oh.
I would not want to be Charlotte Flair taking a kick from Asuka after that.
Oh, so, no.
We'll see what happens.
Now, Asuka going to SmackDown, I think, the biggest statement it made was that, we got to get her off Raw because of Ronda Rousey. We can't have Rousey and Asuka on the same show. Because, I mean, that's... You're basically doing the same type of thing you're going to do, you know, with Ronda after Mania, more often than not, is she's going to be in that role that Asuka was in. And there's no way you can have both of them on the same show, too. So, going to be interesting. Definitely going to be interesting how that plays out. All right, main event. The six-pack challenge for the WWE Championship. AJ Styles against Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens, Baron Corbin, John Cena, and Dolph Ziggler. If you've seen the five ways or six ways and all the different multi-man matches that WWE has put on in main events or pay-per-views, I mean, this is basically what that was. I mean, it's a bunch of guys working hard, doing a lot of stuff, you know, a lot of fast movements and a lot of big high spots. And the crowd was into it throughout. It's really good stuff. We got the drama involving Shane McMahon watching from ringside, eating a big super kick from Owens by mistake, and then caution Owens and Zayn the chance to win the championship. So it looks like, yes, another three-way could be possible. And then we have the story of the match, which kind of, at the end of the show, superseded AJ winning as John Cena. John Cena not involved in the finish because AJ hit the forearm on Owens, pinned him, and Cena's in the ring, sitting in the corner, just desolate. This look on his face, like I'm not going to WrestleMania. And they focused on him a couple of times sitting there towards the end of the show. And we definitely gonna be interested to see where we go from here. I think it's gonna be Undertaker. So that gong is coming. But back to the match. I'm gonna say something about Baron Corbin. I think Baron Corbin worked hard in this match. He's worked in a long time. And he looked impressive in this match. So props to him. Dolph was bumping all over the place, so he was doing some of the good Dolph stuff, so props to him. So everybody pretty much went all out in this match, which that's good, because the booking up to this match was terrible. I mean, hell, they fucking did the match on SmackDown Tuesday night, you know, minus one guy, which was just insane. So, but, you know, they pulled through, they delivered it, but, AJ and Nakamura, WrestleMania, the match that has been, you know, talked about for months and months and months is a definite now. And we got other stuff coming out of it. So, Dylan, your thoughts on this whole spectacle?
That's exactly what it was. It was a spectacle. In some ways, the match it reminded me most of was actually Shane versus Kevin Owens from the Cell, in the sense that it was a main event match. There was so much going on, and it was like that, and it was more about, to me, where that match was about like this heightened sense of danger, and just this, it was kind of, it's like that Cheeky Star versus Invader 3 scaffold match from Puerto Rico we love, Chris, where
yes.
you think somebody could die any moment, so you almost don't want to watch, but you can't not watch, right? And yes, that's kind of what that match was about atmospherically. It was an atmosphere match, kind of a hard match to rate if you're a star rater, because on the one hand, you know, I could see people picking apart for any number of reasons. On the other hand, in terms of compelling matches, you know, I'm not sure I could name 10 in the last 5 years that were as compelling as that to watch. And this match was not as compelling to watch per se, but I think it was a similar match from the perspective of it was really all about the atmosphere. You know, early going, they get the deal where Cena takes everybody out, and it's him and AJ, and they face off, and then that doesn't last very long, and then it just turns into this totally frantic, manic, like just crazy match with wild things happening literally at every point in the building, not even just in the ringside area. You know, you got cross-checking spots in the bleachers with Baron Corbin, Dolph Ziggler.
Yes.
You know, AJ getting thrown through a table almost as like, I don't want to say it was a transition spot because that's not fair, but like almost it didn't stand out as much as you would think the champion taking a finish through a table would. But it also didn't feel like a complete throwaway spot either, because the whole match was just about this gigantic, frantic energy. And then you have the situation with Shane, which is just so bizarre. It makes you wonder if they have any idea at all what they're doing with that storyline. If there ever was a plan. I mean, I'm not convinced there ever was a plan. You know, there's a part of me that thinks that they kind of were playing with the idea that Daniel Bryan was going to come back.
I think so too.
And then they decided not to do it, and then they were boxed in, and then it was like, oh shit, what do we do now? I mean, because there's really no other. I mean, we can criticize Road Dogg for being a bad, you know, booker, as we should, because he's not very good. But even a bad booker isn't going to make a mistake like this, where you have months and months of something that has no even pretense of an end planned. I don't buy that. There's something was planned and it just isn't happening, or it, you know, it's become scrambled. I can't tell which. But this whole situation is just so crazy to watch. And the match, I mean, I'm fine saying Baron Corbin did well. Lots of times he tends to have these weird matches where he stands out and then, you know, he's just kind of back to being Baron Corbin for a while. And he did well. I actually thought everybody looked pretty good in this match, to be honest.
Even though
it was just a strange, like, it kind of was the perfect main event for a show like this, because, you know, we'll get to the thumbs up and thumbs down here in a minute, but, you know, you almost didn't, the match was over, and it was like, I don't know what to think about what I just watched. Was it entertaining? Yeah, for the most part, I would say yes. You know, for that reason, I would say it was a good match, a good main event. Do you have a good idea of where the stories are going for Mania coming out, like you did after Charlotte's match or even after the tag team match? No, really. Actually, you don't. I mean, obviously, it's Styles and Nakamura, but all the other pieces are actually pretty unclear where they're going. And that's okay, because that's why you have TV, but it's hard to see even where they're going to be going on TV. Like, it's hard to even find the connective tissue between the last week to the pay-per-view to the next show. Like, I can't follow the thread. And maybe it's because I'm aloof, or I'm not sufficiently in love with Brian James as,
He's not his father, I can tell you that.
Well, I did hurt the feelings of a religious cultist on Twitter this past week by not bathing in the semen of Brian James or whatever I'm supposed to do. This was a weird kind of, like, it was just a weird main event, because I could see if somebody said to me that match was totally awesome, I would totally understand why. If somebody said to me that match was fucking stupid, I would totally understand why. And I'm just kind of somewhere in the middle, where I thought it was clearly on the good side of the ledger. Lots of fun action, lots of crazy moments. You know, the flow was really well for a six-way with a couple of guys that you would maybe worry might not quite fit into that kind of match. I actually thought everybody did fit into the kind of match. But I don't know what to make of it when it was over and done. I mean, I joked that they basically did the Elimination Chamber match without the chamber, and obviously without the you know, elimination factor. But that's kind of what it felt like. You know, like, it's almost like that was the match they were planning to do in the chamber, minus everybody taking the individual pinfalls, and they just decided, okay, we're going to do it here. So, very, very strange overall feeling coming out of that one.
It's like some of those Ring of Honor you know, big time multi tag team matches or multi man singles matches, or you know, stuff we've seen in PWG and stuff like that. It's just candy. It's like eating a bunch of candy. It's that type of a match. You know, it's, if you're going to the match looking for some type of, you know, big time psychology and whatever, you're not gonna find it. Although there was some in the match. You know, the whole thing with Cena's story and all that stuff, and the stuff with Shane and Kevin and Sammy, whether you like it or not, and most people hate it, but they, you know, they still played off of the whole thing. So there actually was some psychology in the match. But Devin, you in line with us and your thoughts on this? And I know you're a huge fan of the Kevin and Sammy angle with Shane. So this definitely had to make you happy to see that continue.
I thought the match was pretty good and fairly entertaining for the most part. I pretty much agree with you and Dylan. I mean, you know, the Shane Owen Zane stuff had me laughing out loud hysterically for about 3 minutes straight. I actually thought that part of the match was pretty entertaining, but like, not even good or bad, just like totally bizarre. Like, I think I'm of the belief that they had the idea of trying to get Brian clear, then they decided against it or it fell through, and then now they're trapped in a situation where I think they're just going to end up ending it in some random bizarre three-way with Shane having issues with both guys and Zayn and Owens switching roles, and I think I do kind of think that Owens will end up being a babyface after Mania, and Zayn
kind of have to.
A heel. I thought the match was super entertaining. I liked the beginning where that Cena cleared everybody out, and then AJ was smart enough not to fall for it. And then later on, as the chaos continued to ensue, AJ did fall for it and took the table bump.
Yes.
So it was kind of a nice callback to the beginning of the match. I thought that was nice, even if it wasn't intentional. I saw that little narrative there, and I thought that worked well. I like the urgency of everybody breaking up the pinfalls and trying to hit big moves to get the win. You know, the way it was worked, it made sense. You know, it's a big match to go to Mania, and I thought it was a pretty entertaining match. The finish was abrupt, but that makes sense in a match like this. And I was a bit surprised that Owens took the pinfall, but he was, you know, really protected with the Shane involvement, pulling the ref out of the ring and stuff. So it was a fun match and a fun main event. We're clearly getting the AJ Nakamura match, for a company that gets ragged on a lot, I got to give WWE credit I thought they did a good job with it last year too, actually, but they've done a good job with long-term booking and paying off on that. You know, they've teased AJ Nakamura for at least on television since the Money in the Bank confrontation they had mm-hmm. last summer. Mm-hmm. And, Reigns Lesnar too has been built for 3 years and Ronda Kurt, And Triple H and Stephanie that's got 3 years of build on it. And, you know, there's obviously the Kurt and Triple H Stephanie stuff has got even longer.
18 years.
There you go. Yeah. I mean, this hasn't been confirmed or announced or yet, but it's pretty clear Alexa and Nia are going to be in a match. And,
mm-hmm.
There's some rumblings that Mickey might be thrown in there for another three-way, God no. But, you know,
just can't see it.
Regardless, they've been building that since last summer. So for as far as long-term booking and storytelling goes, this has been a pretty good mania for that.
Yeah, I think we're going to get some type of women's battle royal. That's been rumored as well. So, yeah, I think all the women that's not going to be involved in like the championship matches and stuff will be thrown in.
Sasha Bailey, I think will happen.
I think that has to. Although they're kind of, both of them are kind of unsure. So we'll see. It kind of has to. But I want a big statue of Moolah, the Moolah Battle Royal. That'd be tremendous. But Yeah, and we'll see. Like I said, John Cena, you know, we'll see what happens if the gong tolls and soon in the future for Cena to take a match. Because you don't tow that tease out willy-nilly like John Cena did on television.
No.
That's done for a reason. So it's coming. So don't believe all that stuff you were talking about, you know, Rey Mysterio match or whatever. No. It's always been Cena Undertaker. It's just, you know, how they get there. So, all right. Let's give our final thoughts here. Devin, thumbs up, thumbs down, thumbs in the middle. Where you stand?
I'll give it thumbs in the middle going up. I didn't think it was a great show or anything like that, but it was fine. I thought it actually went by pretty quickly, which I think is a big positive. And was never really, you know, besides for about 8 minutes there in Orton and Rude, I was never bored. So, you know, it was an entertaining show, and I thought they moved things along well enough and made things a little bit more clear for WrestleMania. And it looks like they've got the main event matches set up, and I'm looking forward to it. So, yeah, thumbs in the middle going up.
Dylan?
I would go thumbs in the middle, too. In a way, I think I kind of worked myself into a shoot with this show because I thought it definitely, on paper, kind of had a potential to be a Hell in a Cell 2 type situation last year, where we had that show where, you know, SmackDown was weak leading into it, and there were some questions, but then the show ended up exceeding expectations because everybody was sort of on. This show was a show that was really more about building to Mania for the most part, and in that regard, I thought they did a pretty good job, at least with a couple of the matches that they were setting up. I agree with Devin that there was nothing on the show that was bad, really, although I did think there was a couple of matches that were too long and definitely qualified as just being blatant filler and really served no functional purpose. And I'm always going to kind of ding shows for that. The show also lacked a truly great match. And maybe it probably even lacked a very good match. I mean, it would not shock me if that Devin's, you know, end of the month March rankings did not have a single match from this show in the top 20. You know what I mean? And for a pay-per-view, that's kind of an indictment. So, it sounds like I'm more negative on the show than I am. I agree that it was relatively easy to get through. I you know, really liked the Bludgeon Brothers angle. I thought the Asuka angle came off really good. And I thought several matches were in that goodish territory. So I'm definitely in the thumbs in the middle range. But, you know, it, for SmackDown, in a weird way, that's almost like a thumbs up because of how bad the show has been. So,
yeah, we're going on the curve.
You can take that either way.
You know, I'm thumbs in the middle as well. And I kind of want to say here that if it weren't for those angles, the show might be a thumbs down. I think that the Bludgeon Brothers angle and Asuka, you know, I think saved it for me for being a thumbs down. And the main event, too. I think the main event hadn't have been as entertaining as it was. That definitely helped save the show. Because, I mean, yeah, there was nothing that was actively bad. But, I mean, there were parts of the show there where it was like just tedious, you know. Some matches were too long and just nothing really, really great. So, I mean, we've been spoiled lately from Raw, so that's another thing, too. But, I mean, SmackDown being as shitty as it's been, I mean, this has been, that was a step up from that, so that's the good thing, I guess. So, yeah, 4 weeks away from Mania, so we'll see how it plays out from here. All right. Well, I thank everybody for listening. Dylan, Devin, thank you as always for being on the show. And yes, we got 4 more weeks to WrestleMania, so some of us will be back at least for that show. So be ready for that, because that reaction show should be something else, because Mania is going to be a pretty insane spectacle, I think, altogether. So we'll see how that goes. All right, this is Chris for Devin, for Dylan, saying so long from the Peach State of Georgia.